Welcome to your deep dive.
Yeah.
Today, we're going to be looking at the lives of Jacob and Joseph.
Oh, yeah.
From the book of Genesis.
Two of the trickiest twins of deception
yeah.
and destiny.
That's right.
From the book of Genesis.
You've given us quite a stack of sources today.
We have.
So we'll be unearthing some family drama.
Absolutely.
Some unexpected blessings.
Yeah.
And maybe even gleaning some ancient relationship advice that you can apply to your life today.
I think so. Well, I think there's some real wisdom in these stories that we can still learn from today.
That's probably. I'm excited to dive in.
Me too.
So what I find so fascinating about Jacob and Joseph is that their stories aren't just ancient history.
Right.
They wrestle with those timeless questions
yeah.
of ambition, consequence, and how we understand God's role in our lives, even when things get a little messy.
It's true. They're very human stories.
They are.
And I think that's what makes them so relatable.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what makes them so applicable
yeah.
to our lives today. So let's unpack this, starting with Jacob's shortcut
okay.
to inheriting the family business,
All right.
shall we say.
Let's do it.
I'm still surprised at how easily Isaac gets tripped out of that blessing.
Well, you know, it's easy to judge.
Yeah.
But remember, Isaac is blind.
True.
And nearing the end of his life, he's relying on his senses,
yeah.
specifically touch,
yeah.
to confirm what he believes to be true.
Okay.
That makes him profoundly vulnerable to deception, mm-hmm. especially from someone he trusts like his own son.
I hadn't thought about it like that.
Yeah.
It adds this whole other layer to the betrayal.
Absolutely.
But stepping back, expert speaker.
Why is this birthright such a big deal anyway?
Oh, it's a huge deal.
Okay.
In that culture, the birthright wasn't just about who got the bigger inheritance.
Okay.
It determined who led the family.
Oh.
Who carried the torch of their covenant with God.
Okay.
Jacob, spurred on by his mother Rebecca, was grabbing for power.
Yeah.
But also, maybe a destiny he felt was unfairly denied him.
It sounds like his ambition came with some serious baggage.
Oh, yeah, it did.
So how does this birthright theft play out for the family?
It fractures their world.
Okay.
Isaac is left shattered,
yeah.
not just by the loss of the blessing,
right.
but by the realization that his wife and favored son colluded against him.
Wow.
This one act of deception sets off a chain reaction.
Okay.
Forcing Jacob to flee and leaving the whole family reeling from broken trust.
That's pretty heavy.
It is.
Do you think this experience shapes Jacob's future encounters with God?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It sends him on a journey,
right.
both physically and spiritually.
Okay.
He goes from schemer to sojourner.
Okay.
Running from the consequences of his actions and ending up at a place called Bethel.
Bethel. That's where he has that crazy dream with the ladder to heaven, right?
That's it.
It's always been one of those Bible stories that really stuck with me.
Yeah. It's an iconic image.
Yeah.
And one that speaks to those pivotal moments when we sense a connection to something larger than ourselves.
Yes.
Bethel literally means house of God.
Wow.
And for Jacob,
yeah.
it's this unexpected place of encounter where he receives a promise
okay.
that God will be with him
yeah.
even after everything he's done.
It's almost like God saying,
yeah.
okay, Jacob, we've got work to do.
That's right.
I imagine a lot of us can relate to those moments where we feel a bit lost, but end up encountering something profound that shifts our perspective.
I think you're spot on.
Yeah.
For many, this mirrors the experience of leaving home for college.
Oh, yeah.
You're suddenly in this unfamiliar landscape.
Yeah.
Questioning everything you thought you knew.
Right.
And maybe even feeling a bit like you're running from your past.
Totally.
Yet in that very place,
yeah.
you might have those aha moments,
yeah.
those encounters that shape your beliefs and set you on a new course.
And just like Bethel became a turning point for Jacob,
yep.
college can be that place where we solidify our own values.
Right.
Figuring out what we believe and where we stand on things.
It's a great parallel.
It's like building our own personal house of God within ourselves.
That's beautiful.
And
leaving behind the familiar often forces us to confront those big life questions.
Yeah.
And for Jacob, that journey leads him not just to a new understanding of God,
yeah.
but also to love.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least a very intense infatuation.
The Rachel saga?
That's right.
7 years he works for her hand in marriage.
Oh.
That's either true love or an epic case of wishful thinking.
It really is.
What do you think?
Well, the text describes Jacob being smitten with Rachel's beauty.
Okay.
But it's the length of his service
yeah.
that truly raises eyebrows.
Okay.
It pushes us to examine what drives such devotion.
Yeah.
Is it pure love? Or is there an element of possessiveness,
okay.
a desire to claim what he sees as rightfully his,
right.
even if it takes years of toil?
It definitely makes you question whether time truly tests love, or if Jacob's more caught up in the chase than in truly knowing Rachel.
That's right.
What do you think?
I think that's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
We often romanticize long courtships.
We do.
But does time really refine desire into genuine love?
Yeah.
Or can it simply amplify those initial feelings of attraction,
right,
blinding us to potential incompatibilities?
I think that's something for our listener to ponder.
It is.
Is there a point where patience becomes an excuse for ignoring red flags?
Right.
And speaking of things that should be red flags, poor Jacob gets totally tricked on his wedding night.
I know.
He works all those years for Rachel and ends up married to Leah.
The irony is almost too delicious, isn't it? The deceiver deceived.
Yeah.
It's worth noting that back then, wedding celebrations could last for days.
Oh, wow.
And brides were veiled until after the ceremony.
Okay.
Combined with dimly lit tents.
Oh.
You can see how a swap might actually go unnoticed.
Wow. You're telling me Jacob didn't even realize he was marrying the wrong sister.
That's what it seems like.
That's awkward, to say the least.
It is.
And what about Leah? What does this say about her position in the family?
It highlights the vulnerability of women in that culture.
Okay.
They were often pawns in these family power struggles.
Right.
Their desires and happiness secondary to alliances and inheritance deals.
Right.
Leah, in the story, becomes an object of exchange.
Yeah.
Used to fulfill a bargain made without her consent.
It's a stark reminder that even in love stories,
yeah,
there are often power imbalances and unspoken complexities.
Very true.
And this whole situation throws Jacob right into the messy world of polygamy.
It does.
Which is a practice found throughout the Bible.
It is.
But it's important to remember that just because something is described doesn't mean it's endorsed.
That's a really good point.
The text portrays the realities of Jacob's family life.
Yeah.
The jealousies, the rivalries, the heartache that arises from this arrangement. Without shying away from the complications.
But right, and I think that's what makes these stories so valuable.
It's a refreshingly honest approach, really.
It is.
These aren't just tales of happily ever after.
Right.
They're grappling with the very human messiness of relationships and how faith is lived out in the midst of that chaos.
Yeah, exactly.
And speaking of messy situations.
Oh, boy.
Let's talk about those mandrakes.
Okay.
Rachel and Leah bartering for a night with Jacob using these supposed fertility boosting plants.
Yeah, it's giving ancient Viagra vibes.
I know, right? It certainly provides a glimpse into their beliefs about fertility and childbirth.
Yeah.
Mandrake plants were thought to hold magical properties,
right?
Particularly when it came to conception.
Yeah.
But the text is clear.
Okay.
It's God,
okay,
not the plants,
okay,
who ultimately opens Rachel's womb.
So it's a reminder that we might think we're in control.
Yeah.
Using our schemes and remedies.
Right.
But ultimately, life unfolds according to a much bigger plan.
Yeah, I love that. And it's within this family.
Yeah.
Marked by deception, rivalry, and unexpected blessings.
Right.
That Rachel finally gives birth to her firstborn son, Joseph.
That's right.
Joseph.
Our next tricky twin.
He's practically biblical royalty.
Is
what makes his story stand out,
okay,
especially compared to his father's dramatic life.
Well, Joseph is often considered a prototype of wisdom,
okay,
in the biblical narrative.
Interesting.
His life mirrors themes found in wisdom literature,
okay,
particularly his ability to interpret dreams and his unwavering integrity in the face of temptation.
I'm already intrigued, and I'm sure our listener is too.
I hope so.
But for now, we'll have to leave them hanging on the edge of their seats, wondering what adventures await Joseph.
Okay.
And how his path will ultimately intersect with his father's legacy.
It's going to be good.
It is.
I'm excited to talk about it.
Me too. Welcome back. Last time we left off with Jacob's ever-expanding family tree.
And now we're diving headfirst into the story of his son, Joseph.
Okay.
Expert speaker, you mentioned Joseph is a prime example of biblical wisdom.
Right.
What exactly does that mean?
Well, it's not just about being book smart.
Okay.
Though Joseph certainly has that going for him.
Right.
It's about his character.
Yeah.
His ability to discern God's hand, even in the most challenging situations.
Right.
He faces betrayal, injustice.
Yeah.
Years of hardship.
Right.
Yet his faith doesn't waver.
Okay.
That's what makes him a compelling figure,
yeah,
even thousands of years later.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But let's be honest.
Okay.
His own brothers sell him into slavery.
I know.
How does someone come back from that kind of betrayal and still be considered wise?
That's the heart of his story, isn't it?
It is.
He could easily succumb to bitterness.
Right.
To plotting revenge.
Yeah.
Instead, he leans into his faith.
Okay.
Interpreting his experiences through the lens of God's purpose.
Okay.
It doesn't diminish the pain.
Right.
But it allows him to see a bigger picture.
Okay.
To trust that even this horrific act will somehow be redeemed.
It's a powerful reminder that sometimes wisdom isn't about having all the answers.
Right.
But about holding on to faith, even when we don't understand what's happening.
Absolutely.
It makes me wonder.
Okay.
What are some practical ways Joseph demonstrates this wisdom?
His ability to interpret dreams is a key example.
Okay.
Dreams were considered divine messages in many ancient cultures.
Right.
And Joseph's skill in deciphering them not only saves lives, but elevates him to a position of power in Egypt.
You're talking about how he correctly interprets Pharaoh's dreams.
Yeah.
Predicting the 7 years of abundance and the 7 years of famine, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And his advice to stockpile grain during the good years saves Egypt from starvation.
Wow.
It's a testament to his foresight,
his
ability to plan ahead and act decisively,
right,
which are hallmarks of wisdom.
It's like he's a combination of a spiritual advisor and a strategic consultant, the ancient world's ultimate life coach.
He's got it all.
But if we're being honest,
right,
it's also a pretty convenient plot device.
It is.
Do you think there's a deeper meaning to these dreams? Beyond just moving the story forward?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Some might argue it's just a literary tool.
Right.
But what if these dreams represent a way for God to communicate his plans?
Okay.
Not just to Joseph.
Okay.
But to humanity as a whole.
Right.
The famine impacts regions beyond Egypt.
Right.
Forcing people to rely on each other for survival.
Okay.
Could this be a subtle message about our interconnectedness?
Interesting.
About the need for collaboration and foresight in facing global challenges.
Whoa. I hadn't thought about it like that.
Yeah.
Suddenly these dreams become less about individual fortune telling,
right,
and more about a message for all humankind.
That's right.
It makes you wonder if we're paying attention to the dreams in our own time.
Right.
Those warnings and opportunities that might be guiding us toward a better future.
I love that connection.
But even with Joseph's wisdom and God's apparent guidance,
yeah,
he still ends up in some pretty precarious situations.
He does.
I mean, Potiphar's wife falsely accuses him,
right,
leading to his imprisonment.
Yeah.
It seems like even the wisest among us can't escape injustice.
That's true.
It's a reminder that even when we're trying to live righteously, bad things can still happen.
It's true.
But in Joseph's case,
yeah,
his integrity in that situation becomes another testament to his character.
Right.
He refuses to compromise his values.
Absolutely.
Even when it costs him dearly.
Yeah.
And it's that unwavering integrity that ultimately sets the stage for his rise to power.
Yeah.
When Pharaoh needs someone he can trust.
Right.
Someone with the wisdom and fortitude to navigate a national crisis.
Yes.
He turns to the Hebrew slave who had the courage to say no,
yeah,
even when it seemed like it would ruin his life.
Yeah. It's a great reminder that doing what's right might not always lead to immediate rewards. But it builds a foundation of trust and character that can have long-lasting impact.
It's like the saying,
yeah,
character is what you do when no one is watching.
Yeah.
And in Joseph's case,
right,
someone was definitely watching.
Exactly.
But let's not forget the emotional climax of the Joseph narrative.
Yeah.
The reunion with his brothers.
That's right.
Imagine that moment.
No.
Years after they betrayed him.
It's intense.
They're standing before him, begging for food.
Right.
Completely unaware of his true identity.
Talk about awkward family dinners.
But seriously,
okay,
what's going through Joseph's mind at that point?
Well,
is he plotting revenge?
Right.
Or is there a deeper transformation happening within him?
The text describes Joseph weeping, overwhelmed by emotion.
Wow.
He could easily exploit their vulnerability.
Right.
Make them pay for their past cruelty.
Yeah.
Instead, he reveals himself not with bitterness, but with compassion. Wise words.
Okay.
You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good.
Okay.
Are among the most profound in the Bible.
Those words are absolutely chilling.
Yeah.
It's like he's saying,
yeah,
I see your betrayal.
Yeah.
I acknowledge the pain you caused.
Right.
But I choose to believe God had a purpose in it all.
Right.
It's a level of forgiveness that's almost superhuman.
It's a level of forgiveness that points to something beyond human strength.
Right.
Joseph's response suggests a deep trust in God's sovereignty.
Okay.
A belief that even the most horrific acts can be woven into a larger tapestry of redemption.
That's an incredible insight.
Yeah.
It shifts the focus from, why did this happen to me?
Yeah.
To, what might God be doing through this?
Exactly.
It's a challenge to look for those threads of purpose,
right,
even in the midst of suffering.
And for a listener, perhaps it prompts reflection.
Okay.
Are there experiences in your own life that, though painful,
right,
might be leading to something greater?
Yeah.
Can you see God's hand at work, even in the brokenness?
That's a powerful question.
It is.
And one that I think we all wrestle with at some point in our lives.
Right.
But before we get too philosophical,
okay,
I have to admit,
all right,
there are parts of the Jacob and Joseph saga that still leave me scratching my head.
Oh, I'm sure there are.
Yeah.
These stories are full of complex characters and events,
right,
that invite us to dig deeper,
yeah,
to challenge our assumptions,
sure,
to embrace the mystery.
Yeah.
What specifically is puzzling you?
Well, for starters,
okay,
the whole wrestling with God episode.
Oh, yeah.
Jacob wrestles with this mysterious figure.
Right.
Gets his name changed to Israel.
Right.
And walks away with a limp.
Yeah.
It's like a weird dream sequence dropped into the middle of the narrative.
It's one of those passages that has fascinated and perplexed readers for centuries.
Yeah.
Some interpret it literally as, right, a physical encounter with God.
Okay.
Others see it as a metaphorical representation of Jacob's internal struggle, his wrestling with his past choices, and his desire for God's blessing.
So it's not so much about winning or losing a physical fight,
right,
but about grappling with those deeper questions of, yeah, faith, identity, and purpose.
Exactly.
Okay.
The fact that his name is changed to Israel,
yeah,
meaning he who strives with God,
right,
suggests a transformation.
Okay.
A deeper understanding of his relationship with the divine,
right,
and the limp.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's a reminder of his human limitations.
Okay.
A mark of humility that says, even after this encounter,
right,
he's still a work in progress.
It's interesting to think about how even the patriarchs,
yeah,
these figures who are supposed to be models of faith,
yeah,
are still wrestling with doubts,
right,
with their own shortcomings.
It humanizes them.
It makes them feel a bit more relatable, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It humanizes them.
Right.
Reminding us that faith isn't about achieving some level of perfection,
oui,
but about engaging in that ongoing dialogue with God.
Yeah.
Even when it's messy.
Yeah.
Even when we limp away with more questions than answers.
It's a comforting thought, really.
It is.
We don't have to have it all figured out to be in relationship with God.
And speaking of relationships,
okay,
Jacob's reunion with Esau after 20 years of separation is another powerful moment in the narrative.
Oh, yeah.
They go from rivals to reconciled brothers.
Right.
Demonstrating that forgiveness and healing are possible even after deep betrayal.
I remember thinking, finally a happy ending.
Yeah.
But then you get those other stories,
okay,
like Dinah's rape and Judah and Tamar, right, which are so difficult to read.
They are.
Why are those even included in the Bible? They seem so out of place,
yeah,
especially next to these themes of forgiveness and redemption.
That's a question many have grappled with.
Yeah.
Some suggest they serve a literary purpose.
Okay.
Contrasting the flawed older brothers with Joseph's righteousness.
Right.
Others believe they highlight the social realities of the time,
forcing us to confront uncomfortable truths about power,
yeah,
abuse, and the consequences of unchecked actions.
It definitely makes you uncomfortable.
It does.
Which I think is part of the point.
I think so, too.
These stories don't allow us to simply skim the surface of the biblical narrative.
Right.
They force us to engage with the complexity.
Yes.
The messiness of human experience.
Absolutely.
And to wrestle with questions of justice.
Right.
Mercy and the limits of forgiveness.
And perhaps even more importantly,
yeah,
they challenge us to examine our own biases, our, yeah, own tendencies to judge certain characters while giving others a pass.
That's true.
The Bible doesn't shy away from presenting flawed individuals.
It doesn't.
And it invites us to do the same. Right. To look beyond our preconceived notions and to engage with the text in all its raw honesty.
It's a reminder that the Bible isn't just a collection of inspirational stories.
Right.
It's a reflection of human history.
Yes.
With all its beauty and brutality.
Right.
Its triumphs and tragedies.
And within those stories,
yeah,
we find echoes of our own experiences, our, mm-hmm, own struggles with faith,
yeah,
with relationships, mm-hmm, with the search for meaning in a world that often feels chaotic and unpredictable.
It's like looking into a mirror.
Yeah.
But one that reflects not just our own image,
right,
but the image of humanity across time and cultures.
And that's what makes these ancient narratives so compelling.
Yeah.
They invite us to engage not just with the past, but with the present.
Yeah.
To examine our own lives in light of these timeless truths.
Right.
And to discover how they might guide us toward a more just and compassionate future.
We've covered so much ground.
Yeah.
From wrestling matches to dream interpretations to familial betrayals and reconciliations.
Yeah, it feels like we've barely scratched the surface.
It does.
Yeah.
What are some final insights you think our listeners should take away from this deep dive into Jacob and Joseph's lives?
For me, it's the reminder that God's plan is bigger than our understanding, that he can work through even the most difficult circumstances to bring about his purposes.
Yeah.
Jacob and Joseph's stories are a testament to the enduring power of forgiveness.
Okay.
The importance of integrity.
Right.
And the surprising ways in which God can use ordinary people to accomplish extraordinary things.
It's a message that speaks to the heart of what it means to live a life of faith.
Right.
Not just believing in God.
Yeah.
But trusting in his guidance.
Yeah.
Even when we don't understand the path he set before us.
Right.
But what about Rachel's story?
Oh, yeah.
We haven't touched much on her experience, and she's such a pivotal figure in the narrative.
You're right. We focused a lot on the male characters,
yeah,
but Rachel's story deserves its own deep dive.
Okay.
She's a woman who navigates a patriarchal society, experiencing both the joys of motherhood and the deep sorrow of loss.
Okay.
Her death, while tragic,
yeah,
becomes a point of connection across generations, foreshadowing events that will shape the destiny of Israel.
That's a perfect segue into our final segment.
It is.
Expert speaker.
Okay.
Are you ready to guide us through the poignant final chapters of Rachel's journey and the legacies she leaves behind?
I am. Let's do it.
We've explored Jacob's schemes, Joseph's rise to power.
Yeah.
And even wrestled with some of those tougher biblical questions.
We have.
But now you mentioned Rachel's story takes a turn toward the tragic.
It does.
What can you tell us about her final journey and the legacy she leaves behind?
Well, Rachel's story, like so many women in the Bible,
yeah,
is often intertwined with the men in her life.
Okay.
But even within those constraints, we see glimpses of her strength,
right,
her longing,
yeah,
and ultimately her enduring presence in the narrative.
It's easy to forget that for these patriarchs,
right,
their wives weren't just companions.
Yeah.
They were shaping the very future of Israel through their children.
That's right.
It's like their family drama was destiny in the making.
It really was.
What moments in Rachel's story stand out to you as particularly significant?
Her initial barrenness.
Okay.
Then the eventual birth of Joseph and Benjamin.
Right.
Highlight a theme we've seen throughout this deep dive.
Okay.
The tension between human desire and divine timing.
Yeah.
Rachel yearns for children.
Right.
Even resorting to those mandrakes we discussed.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's God who opens her womb.
That resonates with me.
Yeah.
We live in a culture obsessed with instant gratification.
We do.
But Rachel's story reminds us that sometimes the things we most desire,
yeah,
require a season of waiting.
Right.
Of surrendering to a power beyond our control.
Yeah, I think there's a real message there for us today.
Do you think there's a message there for us today?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It challenges us to examine our own hearts.
Okay.
Are we fixated on achieving our goals on our own terms?
Okay.
Or are we willing to trust that God might have a different, perhaps even better,
yeah,
plan unfolding in his own time?
That's a great point.
Yeah.
And speaking of timing.
Okay.
Rachel's death occurs during a seemingly ordinary journey.
Right.
She gives birth to Benjamin.
Yeah.
But then.
The text says she breathed her last and died.
Wow.
A stark, simple statement that underscores the fragility of life.
Yeah.
It's a moment of immense sorrow,
right,
not just for Jacob, but
yeah,
for the entire narrative.
I'm struck by the fact that she dies on the way to Bethlehem.
Yeah.
A location that will become so central to the story of Jesus centuries later.
Right.
It's like her death casts a long shadow.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing future events.
That's exactly what makes Rachel's story so compelling.
Okay.
Her death isn't just a personal tragedy.
Right.
It becomes a symbol of loss and exile.
Okay.
The memorial erected at her gravesite,
yeah,
serves as a constant reminder of her absence.
Okay.
A physical manifestation of grief that resonates throughout the biblical narrative.
You're saying that this one woman's death,
yeah,
thousands of years ago,
mm-hmm,
has ripple effects that we're still feeling today.
Think about it.
Yeah.
During the Babylonian exile, centuries later,
oh,
the Israelites, forced from their homeland,
yeah,
lament their fate by referencing Rachel weeping for her children.
Right.
And then in Matthew's gospel,
okay,
when Herod orders the massacre of infants in Bethlehem,
wow,
that same image of Rachel's grief is invoked.
So you're saying Rachel's story isn't just a side note.
Right.
It's interwoven with these pivotal moments in biblical history.
Exactly.
Connecting themes of exile.
Yeah.
Loss.
Right.
And even the foreshadowing of the Messiah's own suffering.
Precisely. It demonstrates the interconnectedness of the biblical narrative.
Yeah.
How seemingly isolated events are woven together into a grand tapestry.
Right.
Revealing deeper layers of meaning and purpose.
It makes you wonder what other connections we might be missing.
Right.
What other subtle threads are woven through these stories.
Yeah.
Waiting to be discovered.
And that's the beauty of engaging with these ancient texts.
Right.
They invite us to slow down.
Oh.
To pay attention.
Yeah.
To listen for those echoes and whispers that connect us to the past.
Right.
Illuminate the present.
Yeah.
And offer glimpses of hope for the future.
We've journeyed through deception.
We have.
Reconciliation.
Yeah.
Love.
Yeah.
Loss.
Right.
And even some ancient dream interpretation along the way.
A little bit of everything.
Any final thoughts for our listener as they continue their own explorations of Jacob and Joseph's lives?
Remember that these aren't just stories.
Okay.
They're invitations to wrestle with the big questions of life.
Right.
How do we navigate ambition and integrity?
Okay.
How do we respond to betrayal?
Yeah.
Where do we find hope in the midst of suffering?
Right.
Jacob and Joseph's lives,
yeah,
messy and complicated as they are,
they are,
offer timeless wisdom for those willing to dig beneath the surface.
And perhaps the most important lesson of all,
yeah,
is that even when we make mistakes,
right,
even when we stray from the path,
yeah,
God is still at work.
He is.
Weaving those messy threads into a tapestry of redemption.
That's right.
A story that's still unfolding.
Yes.
Inviting us to find our place within its grand design.
Beautifully said.
Until our next deep dive, keep exploring.